We're now about to begin a very special programming segment. You may have heard that the University of Houston has made an offer to purchase our radio station, as well as our FCC license and our transmitter. To address the public about this, we're going to be holding a roundtable discussion. We'll go ahead and patch over to the room where we've gathered some alumni and station management. The number here is 713-348-5878. And with that said, the KTRU roundtable discussion.
All right, good evening. This is KTRU Houston, and right now we have some special programming for you. This is going to be a roundtable discussion with several people from the KTRU staff and the KTRU community who are going to provide you with a discussion about the status of the proposed sale of KTRU to the University of Houston. We anticipate this discussion is going to be for about 45 minutes to an hour. We'll have to see how long everybody thinks they have input to add to the conversation. But the first thing I'm going to do is introduce myself. My name is Johnny So. I'm going to be moderating tonight's discussion. I am a 2001 Rice grad, and I was station manager of KTRU in 2000 to 2001. And the other panelists we have tonight are Julie Grobe, Heather Nodler, Vincent Caperso, Joey Yang, and Kevin Bush. And I'm going to allow each person to spend a little bit of time introducing themselves and their role here at KTRU. And you can't see the table that we're sitting at, but we actually are sitting at a table. So I'm going to turn it over to the person on my right, who is Julie Grobe.
Thanks. My name is Julie Grobe, and I was a Rice Class of 88 graduate. I was promotions director from 85 to 87 and music director from 87 to 88. And in case my name sounds familiar, my father, Dr. Alan Grobe, was on the faculty for over 40 years. So I grew up right near Rice and grew up listening to KTRU.
My name's Heather Nodler, and I'm an 01 grad of Rice. I was the station manager from 97 to 99, and I've been a DJ off and on ever since then in various capacities. Currently, I DJ the Scordatura modern classical show on Saturday afternoons.
My name is Vincent. I'm a community DJ, meaning that I'm not a Rice student. I go to the University of Houston, and my general shift, I've been doing this for about a year, and my general shift is Fridays 12 to 1.
I'm Joey. I'm the current KTRU station manager. My shift is Tuesday afternoon from 3 to 5 p.m., and I'm currently a junior here at Rice. I'm studying mechanical engineering, and I've been a DJ at KTRU since the beginning of my freshman year.
My name's Kevin Bush. Like Joey, I'm part of the student leadership at KTRU. I'm currently a junior at Rice, and I've been a DJ since my freshman year and a music director for the past year.
All right, so those are all of our panelists tonight. We're going to have a lot of different topics to talk about tonight, but I think the first thing most people are interested in is to get a response from Joey about, Joey, can you give us an update on what the status is of the proposed sale of KTRU to the University of Houston? You know, what's going on? Where are we at? What do we need to do in the near future?
Well, obviously, if you're listening to us on the radio right now, we are still here. We are still broadcasting. The University of Houston and Rice are currently in contract negotiations still. They're working on some parts of the contract and are attempting to finalize the sale of the station. But until then, we are still broadcasting and we're still alive and well and broadcasting on 91.7 FM and KTRU.org.
Okay. One of the things that I think would be most useful for people in, keeping track with our discussion today is, we've got people here at the table who come from various different relationships to the station. Some of us are more recent graduates. Some of us are current students. Some of us have been around, involved with KTRU for quite some time. So one thing that is useful, I think, for people to understand KTRU's position is to talk a little bit about the history of KTRU. So if anybody at the forum here feels willing to speak on that, let's talk a little bit about how KTRU came to be and how KTRU got to be where it is today.
Well, I'll jump in. K-True started, I think it's important for everyone to know that K-True started as a student-initiated project. It was a very small little engineering project in Hanson College, which is one of the residential colleges at Rice. And I think for its first year, it was just in Hanson. It was just a fun thing that the students did. In the early 70s, it moved over to the Rice Memorial Center, broadcast out of the basement, and the wattage increased slowly. I think around the start of the 80s, it became 650 watts. So it reached inside the loop and a little bit beyond, and at that point, it was a pretty flourishing station. It was all student-run at that point, no staff. And in the mid-80s, the station moved up to the second floor of the RMC, where it has been ever since. In 1991, the station expanded to 50,000 watts. And I guess in the late 90s, added some staff to help with running the station and engineering.
Yeah, I think one thing that a lot of people have been interested in is K-True is unique in that it is a 50,000-watt station, which my understanding is, from an engineering standpoint, is basically a very powerful terrestrial radio station. And a lot of people are wondering, you know, how did K-True even get there? You know, how did K-True go from a small, like you said, a small radio station operating in the basement of the university to a 50,000-watt station that can reach all across Houston and beyond? Does anyone want to talk about how that transformation came into play?
I can talk about it in strictly non-technical terms. So if anyone else wants to jump in, Ian, at all, to correct me on any of my technical information. But basically, my understanding is that Mike Studi, who is a member of the Brown family here in Houston, a very well-known philanthropic family, was owner of a station called KRTS, which broadcasted at 92.1. And in the early 90s, he was interested in boosting the power of his station to the point where his station signal would have completely obliterated K-True's 650-watt signal at 91.7. So there were FCC regulations about what signals could do to each other, and it basically was against the law for him to completely drown out our signal. And so his option was not to boost his signal or to boost our signal concurrently so that we had a comparably powered station. So he set up a fund and paid for the power increase, the construction of a large tower, which is sort of in the Humble area, and paid for many, many years for the upkeep of the transmitter and our signal in general.
So it seems like, you know, the upgrade from 650 watts to 50,000 watts was partially a situation of circumstance where, you know, it was not necessarily something that the students asked for or even demanded. It was just from a technical standpoint, it occurred in order to accommodate 92.1 and their desire to increase their own wattage. You know, Joey, I have a question for you, and, you know, this is going to be helpful for a lot of the listeners out there. There's a lot of confusion or misunderstanding about how K-True works in terms of, you know, who can work at K-True, you know, what the organizational structure of K-True is, how does somebody get involved in K-True. I think there's a lot of misconceptions that K-True is just a bunch of people playing on the radio basically whatever they want, and there are no standards, there's no protocols for regulating content and who works there. And I think you're probably the best person to answer the question of, you know, tell us a little bit about how K-True works from a functional standpoint on a day-to-day basis as it is now and for the recent past.
Well, K-True is, like has been said before, entirely student-run. We do have some members of the family who are paid staff. That includes an office assistant, a chief engineer, and a general manager. And other than that, the day-to-day operation is entirely students. The programming, the actual DJing, we do have some members of the community who DJ, but the management is all entirely done by Rice students.
Okay, and so obviously we have Vincent here at the table. There's the opportunity for people in the community to get involved. from K2's perspective, you know, what is the value that community members bring to the station? You know, as you said, it's a student-run organization. My understanding is that it's paid for primarily from an operation standpoint with tax, a quote blanket tax imposed on all the students. So, when somebody like Vincent wants to get involved in K2, what is K2's perspective on that, and how does that happen from a functional standpoint in terms of how they get involved?
Well, K2's philosophy is always to you know, find new music, find the viewpoints that no one else is bringing to the table, you know, ones that are underexposed. And as Rice students, we are a very diverse student body. We come from a lot of backgrounds. We have a lot of things to offer. But that being said, we don't have it all. And there are members of the community who do, and we and that is really valuable to us because. It opens up, you know, opportunities for us to gain from, you know, outside the edges.
If I could, further elaborate on that, I would just like to say as a community member, how, easy it was to get access to K-True and how open it was, to sign up. You go to K-True.org and it's right there on the front page. Do you want to be a DJ? This is how you do it. And it was incredibly simple, as opposed to KUHF, where there is absolutely no student participation. I actually called KUHF Friday and asked, as a UH student, how could I be involved in similar ways that I was involved with K-True, programming, music, being on air. And I asked those questions, how I could be involved, and they said there was no way. And it was not student-run. What they currently have right now in their marketing department of KUHF is kind of like a student booster club where you attend events and you kind of help move things. And that's fine. I do that for K-True all the time. But it's different when you're actually involved. And the entire K-True community, including Rice students and alumni and other community members that have been doing it for years, are incredibly open and willing to work with you, and that's very nice.
So let's talk a moment about the actual sale and how it came to be that the radio station was proposed to be sold to the University of Houston. Joey, from your perspective, or Kevin, from your perspective, you know, how did this come about? I mean, did you basically wake up one morning with an email that said, "Hey, K-True is for sale"? You know, were you involved in those types of discussions? Just, you know, what is the nexus for the sale of K-True to the University of Houston?
It actually wasn't an email that said K-True is for sale. It was actually a phone call that says K-True has more or less been sold. So we were obviously we were blindsided by it. As a matter of fact. From our understanding, Rice put K-True on the market about a year ago, and you know it looked for offers. And I'm sorry.
If I may add, from our talks with the administration, that they mentioned that they had been appraising the market value of the transmitter for years. They told us as far back as 2005, and all of those appraisals went on without our knowledge.
Yeah, right.
So it does seem a little bit, I think from most people's perspective, you know, listeners to K-True, people involved in K-True, it seems a little unusual that something like that could, you know, something as big, as monumental as the sale of the station could happen without any input or involvement from the students. But it seems like, and you know, correct me if I'm mischaracterizing, but it seems like that's basically what happened in this situation. I mean, would you agree with that? That's the case.
That's accurate.
Yeah, okay. I think it's worth noting that by no means is the administration or board of trustees under any, you know, binding legal obligation to get us as student stakeholders involved with the process. But Rice advertises itself as a place that's, you know, amenable to input from the community, and that includes students. And in this case, there was no input whatsoever. We weren't even informed at all of the process.
Well, one thing that's really interesting to me about that, and this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier about the power increase. When the power increase happened from 650 to 50,000 watts, one of the things that if you talk to anyone who was a student leader at the time or even a Rice staff member at the time who was privy to the conversations, one of the the big issues was that the students were very nervous about precisely this thing happening. And they received all kinds of assurances from the university that this would not happen, that the radio station was the students. They had created it, and it was theirs. And certainly the power increase was somewhat circumstantial, but that it was their radio station. So I think that this took a lot of people by surprise.
I'd like to add that there's a 2000 Rice Thresher article that can be found online that details this.
And it's not only the students who were left out of this conversation, but also faculty, staff, and alumni. And as an alum, I was very surprised to learn about the sale of the station, because my understanding was that there was a committee made up of students, faculty, and staff, and including non-K-True students, that was involved with any sort of programming decisions. And so I think those of us who had worked at the station as students or enjoyed the station as students or enjoyed the station as listeners and were alums really just assumed that any kinds of major decisions about the station would be made in that kind of with that kind of broad-based input. So that was really a surprise that kind of broad-based input wasn't there, because that's what we usually see from Rice and something I think we're all proud of about Rice.
Well, and certainly you could see it from the tradition of K-True, right, that we had been on the air for over 40 years in some capacity or another, and that we had largely been autonomous and able to make our own decisions as far as programming was concerned.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, leads us to another question, which is certainly from the administration's perspective, it seems like it was not a decision that necessarily needed to involve K-True input or alumni input. But from a fairness standpoint, why does K-True think that that they needed to be involved in this discussion? You know, the administration obviously disagrees with that. And Heather, maybe what you were implying was that, you know, this has been the station, student station, for the past 40 years. But from a fairness standpoint, Joey or Kevin or anybody at the table, you know, why should the administration have involved K-True in this decision?
K-True is a student student association organization, the SA. We are accountable to the students. Our station manager is elected by the students. And we are an organization by the students of the students. And for the university to short-circuit that, it doesn't seem consistent with our role in the student association, with our standing there.
K-True runs itself, and it runs itself very well. The students here maintain it. The specialty show DJs that work put very good work into their shows. And we have very little assistance from the faculty or actually working with faculty. And it's just interesting that something that they're selling or trying to sell has been worked on and cultivated by the students in the community. I guess what I'm trying to say is K-True is a lot bigger than a administrative asset, and it became bigger and more independent when it was student run, and even bigger with the transmitter we received.
And it was not only run autonomously, but it was run pretty inexpensively from the university. The transmitter was basically a gift, and most of the labor of keeping the station on the air and making listeners happy came from student volunteers and some community volunteers.
Labor of love.
Right.
Well, the transmitter was a gift that was given so that the thing that the students had built could be maintained, right? Like, it wasn't that they gifted it to the university because the university said, we need a transmitter. They gifted it to the station because they were legally obligated to raise the students' radio station power if they were going to be raising their own power. So
it's worth taking into consideration that the Rice administration is working on behalf of the students and the community that nourish the administration, that nourish Rice University. And how can they be making decisions on the students' behalf if they don't discuss these with the students?
Another sort of concern that I've heard raised, I don't know if it came in one of the submitted questions or not, was obviously these are difficult economic times, and there have been budget cuts at Rice. There have been cuts in some staff positions, which is terrible. But so I just want to clarify that the money from the sale is not planned to go to anything like salaries and
general
president
operating.
Or right general operating of the university. Mm-hmm. And President Lebron has said in several communications to the Rice community, like emails that he sent out, that the desire to build a new servery, which is where $4 million of the sale proceeds would be going, was not really a driving force, and that what the administration plans to spend the rest of the money on has not actually been decided yet. So it's not a situation where something was going to happen, like students couldn't get scholarships and they desperately needed $10 million, or, you know, staff was going to be lost and they desperately needed $10 million. It seems very unclear.
The argument that this is a purely economic decision is a very weak one, I would agree.
Well, and I think that maybe the argument isn't purely that it's economical. I think that that's been one piece of supporting evidence, but I think that the argument has also been about our programming and how important it is to Rice and the community. And so I think that that's one big point that we've been trying to push, is that we have been doing really effective programming and we have been reaching out to the Houston community and we do a lot of great things. And I think that there may have been some misunderstanding in terms of how the university understood what our impact was and even what our potential could be, right? So there was this sort of evaluation made that was also used as a justification, but that maybe we could talk about here at some point.
Yeah, I mean, and that actually raises a good question that I have heard raised on numerous occasions, is the view that KTRU is sort of, you know, this insular organization that, you know, it's the tangible benefit or maybe intangible mm-hmm. benefit that it brings to the Rice University students in particular is not particularly clear. And, you know, I think this is an argument that has been raised publicly by the administration on several occasions, at least that I've seen in the media, basically saying that the students in general do not really care about KTRU. They did not support a proposal to raise the blanket tax to support KTRU by $2. So how does KTRU respond to that type of position where the administration says, basically, the students don't really care about KTRU, so what are you, KTRU, bringing to the table in terms of serving the students and serving the university?
KTRU is an opportunity for the student voice to be heard. KTRU's programming is currently entirely student-decided. As a student...
How many student DJs would you say we have, Joey?
About 40 of what...
active this semester. I mean, we have several more who are, you know, in our contact list mm-hmm. who have been DJs in the past and are sticking around, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's correct. But KTRU's program is entirely student-decided, and you know, any student is welcome to apply to be a DJ and is welcome to make programming suggestions. You know, this is a radio station for the students. And just because that students sometimes choose not to take these opportunities doesn't mean that they're not there. Doesn't mean that we're not offering them.
I think it's important to address that from my conversations with other Rice students who don't really know that much about KTRU or aren't really involved with the organization, due to KTRU's programming, a lot of students find the station to be, you know, inaccessible, just too out there and weird. And it's developed a bit of a stigma around campus. I think that'd be an accurate way to characterize it. But with the KTRU leadership, we've in recent years have been taking active steps to engage with the student body to get them, as Joey said, to recognize the opportunities that KTRU presents. In the past, we've had campaigns to increase KTRU's blanket tax, which is paid for by the student body here at Rice. In order to get that blanket tax increase passed, we have to get a supermajority vote of the student body. And in our campaigns for that, we've aggressively advertised KTRU to the students and tried to explain its value, get people to tune in, recognize the variety of specialty programming we offer, et cetera, et cetera. And Although KTRU's blanket tax was voted down, it's important to note that last year we got, I think it was 55% of students to not only, by their vote say they value KTRU's continued existence, but they want to give KTRU increased funding.
Yeah.
So that was 55?
So, yeah.
55%.
And that was actually up, I think, 10 percentage points from the year before. So KTRU's reputation with the students is expanding, and the current leadership is, proactively engaged in trying to get students more involved with the station.
And I would say that we're not insular by any means. That's
we don't want to be insular.
Exactly.
We can't survive as an organization in a vacuum.
Yeah.
We would love increased student involvement, and we're trying very hard to increase that student involvement.
Well, and two things I might add as an alum. One, I know that a vote down on a blanket tax increase is not a referendum on the existence of a student organization.
Right.
Lots of student organizations ask for blanket tax increases and have them denied. They don't get the supermajority.
From my understanding, KTRU has historically been one of the largest student organizations at Rice.
Absolutely.
It's important to note that.
Well,
yeah,
and
Heather, let me interrupt you for one second. You know, there's a lot of listeners out there, and they're hearing the word blanket tax, and it means absolutely nothing to them. They don't understand
what
Rice lingo that's being thrown around. Kevin or Joey or anybody at this roundtable, does anyone want to discuss what the blanket tax is and how it contributes to KTRU's existence?
The blanket tax is a fee that is paid by every undergraduate student at Rice that goes towards the Student Association, which is a funding for all, or at least most, student organizations on campus.
Major student organizations, not like little clubs, but
So how much does KTRU get from per student via the blanket tax? I mean, are we talking about $100 here per student?
No, it's $5.50.
Yes.
Okay. So basically $5.50 from each student goes to fund KTRU's operations.
Right. Like the concerts we put on for students and other events like that.
Okay. So now that – I just wanted to clarify that point before people got their heads in the clouds a little too much about what we're talking about.
Didn't want to throw out that Rice jargon too much, but I brought up the blanket tax because it provides support to the larger point that KTRU does not exist, in a vacuum at Rice, and that we're taking active steps to reach out to the Rice community.
Well, not only that, but I mean, as someone who's been around for 14 years now, I've seen a lot of change happen at the university, and with all organizations, not just KTRU, there are ebbs and flows, right?
You
know, you have years where certain organizations get a whole lot of attention, and then other years where maybe the attention sort of shifts to other ones, just sort of depending on the zeitgeist of the moment. And so if KTRU didn't get a blanket tax increase voted up this year, that doesn't mean that
students don't want KTRU to continue existing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't mean that more students aren't going to be involved in KTRU. I mean, you guys mentioned – how many DJs did you say typically are Rice students right now?
I would say about 40. I haven't looked at the directory recently, but I think it's about that number.
And so that's what it was when I first got here. And, over time, I think it goes up and down. There have been times when we've had almost 100 student DJs involved. It just depends on kind of the general culture, who's at the university. It's a fairly small university.
Mm-hmm.
And, this actually raises an interesting point in terms of whether or not students like KTRU or like KTRU's programming versus whether or not students like KTRU as a concept. I mean, I think that's an important distinction to make. I mean, I think, and maybe most of you at this table would agree, if KTRU was most interested in, let's make ourselves the most appealing station to the students on a programming level, we would be playing we'd be playing Lady Gaga all the time, or we'd be playing Drake or something like that. But, I that doesn't seem consistent with my understanding of how what KTRU's goals are. And it's interesting to note that, from my perspective, you know, there are plenty of other opportunities for students to listen to the types of music that they want to on the commercial spectrum. So it doesn't – it seems a little strange to me to expect K-True to, I guess, sort of be engaged in a popularity contest in terms of programming with some other commercial stations. It just doesn't seem consistent with this goal.
I almost think K-True gives students an opportunity to have sort of a curatorial role in running a radio station. You know, I don't think – you would look at a film series at Rice or the Rice Gallery and say, are we bringing in, you know, the most blockbuster shows? And similarly, I think, you know, the students at K-True, they have the opportunity, because it's a non-commercial station, to play what they think is the best and most interesting music available for their listeners. And so I think they get, you know, they get to make some critical judgments about what they play. And, you know, they could run on the model of a professional museum where they may want to have shows by emerging video artists, but because they have to bring money in, they have to, you know, trot out the Impressionists regularly so they can have a big blockbuster show. And it may be that, you know, I mean, K-True's programming, I would think, is flexible so that, you know, different shows can be added and
I would
change.
I would really like to discuss our programming, actually, for anyone that isn't quite in on how it works. As far as our general shift DJ goes, we have we're required to play 4 playlist stacks, right? 4 is the current number?
Per hour.
And playlist stacks are all of the new music we get in. We get in over 200 CDs from different labels, and sometimes people just that have, you know, a cassette or a CD demo that they want to send us. And that's decided on by our music department, which every DJ is a member of the music department. Community members obviously can't be, like, head of music department, but our input is welcomed. You come in, you check out the music, you listen to it, you write your review. So we really get to control playlist as well. So something from the playlist, and then 2 alternative tracks every hour as well. And alternative can be death metal to blues to reggaeton or more or Zydeco, more specifically, just alternative tracks. And then beyond that, whatever is left after those 6 songs is really up to us and the stacks. So it really is very, very open, and I guess that's why you can tune in sometimes and you'll be hearing, you know, an experimental jazz track, but if you just wait 5 or, depending on the jazz track, 9 minutes later, you'll hear something completely different. So other radio stations really have it a lot easier because they pick an idea, they pick a certain sound that they want to go with, and they pursue that. But K-True basically picks everything and lets everyone kind of have their own slot as long as it's underrepresented and educational. And I think we're true in that mission.
Absolutely. And we also have, in addition to the general shift programming, we have specialty programming. And that that actually gets back to the conversation we were having earlier about community members and their value to the station. Whereas we have these general shifts that are supposed to be very much about exploration and experimentation and learning, we also have these very sort of solidly anchored regular programs that have been the same for years and years and years. We try and keep them very consistent. And part of the way we've done that is by having community members DJ them, oftentimes with student members. But so we have things like Navrang, which is an Indian subcontinent music show that comes on Saturday morning. We have an Africana show. We have the Modern Classical show, which I DJ. We have world music, Americana, hip-hop, a very, very, very popular blues and hi-fi show. If you've ever accused K-True of not being listenable, listen to the blues and hi-fi show. It is seriously about the catchiest thing can ever hear. It's amazing.
It's quite amazing.
Chicken Skin, which is sort of, you know, bluegrass, folk, rockabilly, that sort of thing. And then jazz and improv on Sundays. So there's all this great programming that is, you know, not getting talked about enough in this conversation. Not this conversation at this table, but...
I would agree. I mean, these DJs, which are community DJs, I believe Clint was a community DJ, right? He wasn't a Rice student, and he's had an amazing amount of involvement with K-True. He's been doing the blues for over 10 years. He helped start, I believe, Spoken Word as well, and he's done a lot, and these specialty shows have an amazing fan base. Clint was telling me that he was doing one of a live show at another record store, and all of his fans had kind of come, and the most precious, I guess, thing that had happened was a little girl had come. She was around 8 years old, and she came with her parents that had listened to the show, and she had been listening to the show, and during Clint's Blue show, at the hour, he plays a Spotlight 45, and she made him a homemade Spotlight 45. It was a paper plate, and it was colored in like a small little 45, and she folded in the edges, and from the edge, she actually made a little arm like to drop on the needle. And so people love these shows, and if you feel like listening to one of these shows, I welcome it. They're amazing, and they really they appreciate the listeners. There's a lot of feedback and interworking with the community. Our DJs are very accessible.
All right. Well, you know, one thing that we've talked a lot about the programming, and obviously the programming is important. People at the station think the programming serves is of great value to the Rice community and the Houston community in general. But what are some other things that maybe intangible benefits that K2 brings that would be lost if the station was gone? Obviously, if the station goes away, if I turn my radio to 91.7, I'm not going to hear K2. I'm going to hear, from my understanding anyway, classical or possibly some NPR programming. But aside from the loss of such and such song on such and such time, what other things do you think would be lost if K2 went away?
I would say leadership opportunities. It's, again, K2 is another club that you can get involved in on campus, and there we have a strong, vibrant student body leadership core, and without the FM, it's a bunch of kids hanging around and just picking stuff off their iTunes, but with this there's sort of responsibility that comes with this, and there's a responsibility not only to Rice, not only to our students, but to all of our faithful listeners, and that sort of drives us, and it makes us, a greater organization than we could have been if we had, only just been doing this for ourselves.
And there's also a responsibility to the FCC, right?
Exactly.
Which would go. I mean, that's a big responsibility for an undergraduate student to be responsible for programming and following FCC regulations, and that goes away too.
I remember vividly when I was an undergraduate. I was only 19 years old. I can remember being up late at night and having to deal with DJs who maybe committed, who put us at risk of losing our FCC license. Having to get up in the middle of the night and have conversations and hire and fire people and do things that, most people don't have the opportunity to do until they're well into their careers.
Yeah, and Joey, I think, on a day-to-day basis, maybe it would be helpful for people to understand, what do the students and volunteers at K2 do? I mean, I think from a listener's perspective, all they do is they turn on the radio and, wham, there's music there. What are some of the things that the building blocks that get us from point A to point B, and how are students involved in that, and how do they make it happen?
There's a choice of music. There's engineering. There's leadership, putting together a schedule, hiring DJs.
Local events.
To mention like the outdoor show.
Exactly. Putting on concerts, coordinating, outreach, publicity. All these things is basically running almost like running – it's running an organization, like a small company almost. It is running a radio station.
And I think one of the points that the administration has made – at least publicly in some of their press releases, is from their perspective, they've articulated the point that none of those things would be lost if K2 is sold. My takeaway seems to be that if K2 goes off the air, there will still be an internet-only broadcast. And at least they've claimed that the leadership opportunities, the ability to coordinate, to hire people, et cetera, won't be lost just by virtue of losing the transmitter. You will still have the internet stream. What is K2's response to that? That nothing will really disappear just by virtue of the transmitter going off the air.
Again, it goes back to the responsibility we have. By being on the air, we have a responsibility to the students. We have a responsibility to anyone that can listen to us. So when you go on the internet, then all that responsibility disappears. It vanishes, and then at that point, it just becomes people doing whatever they want to do.
I think the fact that the FCC so carefully regulates the radio waves, but very much less carefully gets involved at all in regulation of the internet, is a big sign that it matters that we're on the radio and not just on the internet.
Exactly. Anyone can run a music blog. Anyone can make a podcast. But it's not anyone that can run a very powerful radio station. That requires, you know, skill and coordination on the student's part, and a lot of that's learned by being with the organization.
I think you lose a lot of community outreach as well. Yes, we'll be on the internet, but being on the radio station allows you to randomly, arbitrarily tune into the radio station. That's how I discovered the radio station.
Same here.
That's how many others have. People outside of Rice as well. We have petitions that you can download on SaveKTRU.org, and people that are not Rice students in the community have come in to drop off these petitions. It's amazing. Last week, someone came in, I think, from Pasadena, which I believe is like a 40-minute drive, and then we had another guy come in from Galveston, all these different places that KTRU has been able to reach because of its place, I guess, on the FM dial. And you lose that voice, and you lose that, I guess, community support and spirit. KTRU nourishes the community nourishes KTRU.
And I think listening to music on the radio is a very different experience than listening to music online.
Yes.
For one thing, I listen to several stations regularly, and I flip around. You know, if Kevin plays some crazy drone music and it's 7 a.m.
Which I have been known to do.
Exactly. I may switch over to KPFT or some other station to listen. But if you're listening online, you really have to know what you're going to listen to. You're
exactly.
going to listen to KTRU. You're bringing up KTRU. That's the only thing that's there. If you're, you know, sure, there's some technology for listening online in your car, but not everyone has that. It disenfranchises listeners who don't have model fancy cars.
So radios
some
are cheap.
Some of us have to hunt for our internet. And also, you ask a local Houston band, which KTRU is, I would say, one of the only voices in Houston that will play local bands. Ask a local band, would they rather be heard on the radio or on the internet? And I'm pretty sure they would say radio. It has a different presence to it.
Well, they're being heard on Rice Radio.
It's would you rather have an article in the New York Times or on the internet, right? I mean, there's a sense of content that's being vetted that's more important when it goes out over the FM airwaves as opposed to this big, massive, amorphous thing that we know as the internet.
And I think it's much more exciting for students to be involved in a terrestrial radio station, part
live.
Of the live on the air, mm-hmm. part of the history of radio. And I think the student involvement, as has been noted at some other stations that went online, is just going to plummet.
Young people usually don't have a medium to which to broadcast their ideas or their voice or their presence on such a large scale, and 91.7 KTRU provides that.
Now, I think one argument has been made, you know, that, you know, the future is now, in a sense, in that, you know, sure, radio is popular now, but 10 years from now, and this was, you know, I attended the public meeting on Rice campus last week, and one point that somebody in the audience made was radio is going away. You know, 10 years from now, nobody's going to be listening to terrestrial radio. Everybody's going to be listening to internet radio. So what's the big deal? Why make the big fuss about a 50,000-watt transmitter whereas, you know, in the future, everyone's going to be listening on the internet? I mean, did y'all have a response for that argument?
We had a few, be my guest,
yeah,
Kevin.
The issue for KTRU, and I think one of the primary reason so many people in KTRU are vehemently opposed to the sale is – we're genuinely concerned that our organization won't be viable and it won't survive long enough to reach that future moment in which internet has phased out terrestrial radio.
These
the issue is the viability of our station in the near and immediate term.
I think Nick Cooper, who was at that meeting as well, had a very good point in that these organizations that are behind these radio stations may very well transfer to an internet-only format, but these organizations will still be intact. If we lose our signal, we're going to have a loss in our management department, in our promotions, and in our programming, And it's really just – it's kind of like slowly choking the life out of this station before we have time to jump to that next format. And
yeah.
Another great point he made was, yes, we may not be using the radio, but we could say that about a lot of technology that we have right now. You know, our DVDs, our telephones, and you don't see people ripping, you know, ripping their cell phones apart and throwing them away or destroying all their discs. You know, it's to say what could be in the future.
Issue isn't so much the K-Tru people or reactionaries who are holding on to our you know, outmoded technology. We're sincerely concerned that an abrupt transition to internet only would be the de facto death of K-Tru as we know it.
I wanted to also there was an example that was brought up to my attention where this happened at another university, and I'm not sure the exact figure, but I think that radio station
USC, right?
Southern California.
Yes.
When their station went internet only, I believe they lost about 3/4 of their DJs.
Yeah, I think Nick Schlossman, previous station manager of K-Tru, contacted them. From what I recall, or from what he told me, they went from around 200 or so DJs to less than 20.
Oh, wow. 90% then.
Yeah. They also dramatically lost or scaled back the number of hours of automated programming they had. And USC has, you know, about 10 times the student population as Rice does. And, you know, they have substantially greater manpower than KTRU does.
And I'd like to mention, I mean, K-Tru has actually been on the forefront of providing streaming content. Mm-hmm. There's been
right.
content online for 10 years.
Let's not forget that we currently are online.
Yeah.
I mean, that's...
And I think it's a really different thing to talk about a planned transition to a technology in the future and how to best maintain what you're doing now and think about options down the road and just cutting something off entirely without
being told to go on with what's left over.
Well, and I mean, Julie and I both work with technology a lot in our work. And if you study the history of technology, you see the patterns that emerge, right? Like you see how technologies are adopted or not adopted. And what you never, ever, ever do is say, I get a sense that the technology is going to be here this way in 10 years. And so I'm going to jump on that now. Right? You have some people who adopt things early and some people who adopt things later. But if you have something like a radio frequency, which is a very scarce resource, you know, space on the FM dial, it's like highly coveted land and there are land grabs for it. You don't just give that away with the very speculative sort of assumption that you're going to have this very robust operation on the internet in 10 years, right? Like that's just not smart technology movement at all.
And clearly the terrestrial radio station was considered by the University of Houston to be valuable enough that they are interested in having a second one. This is not that they do not have a radio station, but they have one and they want another one.
I guess, well, that, you know, I guess maybe Rice's priorities and University of Houston's priorities are different.
Well, and so I think that, you know, we're talking about what Rice and the University of Houston get out of this deal, but one of the other big questions for me, like what's important about K-Tru is what Houston as a city in terms of diverse media gets out of this, right? Like if you think about what options Houston has in terms of broadcast media and how diverse those are or are not, K-Tru is a big voice for diversity. It's a very independent, not at all governed by, you know, corporate interests or any other interests really than pure educational artistic motives. It's going to go away and there's going to be a large corporation. It's a not-for-profit corporation, but there's going to be a large corporation providing the content on that frequency.
And it was just Rice students who are putting that out for the entire city to hear. That's, you know, a great way for Rice University to be known outside of, you know, outside of Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take a moment to analyze some of the arguments that have been raised by the administration. And you know, I think Julie, you hinted at this a moment ago that you know U of H is obviously willing to spend $9.5 million on the FM. The 91.7 FM frequency and the transmitter. So from the administration's perspective, you know, what is wrong with their goal of accepting $9.5 million and using it towards funding other programs at the university? From a student's perspective, you know, school just started. If you were talking to a freshman who's only been on campus for 2 weeks and they said, well, they're going to sell the radio station for $9.5 million and in exchange we're going to build XYZ, from that student's perspective, what is the problem with that, or what would be their objections that you would raise to someone like that, who, you know, to be quite honestly, would benefit, actually tangibly benefit from the sale of KTRU? Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
It sends a message from the administration. It sends, you know, the message that says we know what's best for you. You know, the students were not involved. You know, I would say the administration went behind our backs. I've spoken with a few freshmen actually, and they've approached me with questions, you know, saying, you know, what's happening, and you know, I run them through the story, and they say, well, it doesn't seem right, you know, what. At Rice, there are a lot of things that make this university unique. There are a lot of reasons why I came all the way from Ohio to be here. There are some traditions that Rice does that no one else does. We have orientation week, which is a far cry from the boring orientations at a lot of other universities. We have events like Beer Bike. We have the college system. We have KTRU. These are the reasons why I came here. These are the reasons why I pay tuition to this university. All of that is student-run, and that's one of the things that makes Rice unique. And it's scary to, you know, watch this be taken.
Yeah, I mean, from a strictly monetary standpoint, I mean, the administration's rationale for, you know, liquidating this one asset to spread the monetary benefits around, I can emphasize with that line of thinking. But as Joey said, for the Rice community, there are other more troubling issues that the sale raises, you know, vis-a-vis Rice's uniqueness, its amenability to community input. And that's what a lot of us are concerned about, you know, in the Rice community.
Yeah, I mean, speaking for myself, you know, I'm an alumni, and, you know, one of the things that was most troubling to me personally was, you know, obviously the process, but also the more generally speaking, the priorities that the university seems to place on various things. I mean, I had always sort of had the envision of universities, you know, Rice and universities in general, that they sort of exist in a model that doesn't necessarily place monetary interest over everything else. And that's actually certainly KTRU's model, and maybe that's why it's a flawed model from the administration's perspective.
Right.
I mean, I knew when we were when I was a station manager at KTRU, we would put on events that we knew were going to lose money. We were okay with events that we knew would lose money because we thought those events, you know, had benefits other than monetary benefits to the Houston community and to the station and the people that worked at the station. So, you know, from my perspective, it was more an issue of, you know, this is an example of a troubling value system that has been adopted by my alma mater. And so, you know, it's one thing it's almost like, you know, you envision a university as, you know, the greatest dad in the world. They runs around town with a shirt that says number one dad, and then you find out later that you know, dad's at the bar with women he doesn't know instead of at home reading stories to his children. I mean, that's kind of what it is from my perspective.
Yeah. There's some disillusionment that's happened.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess some listeners who you know, aren't really involved at Rice might perceive this as a bit of, you know, naivete on KTRU's part. You know, why should we expect the administration, you know, to consult us? But really, Rice advertises itself as a place, you know, where the input of the community is highly valued, and that's one of the many factors that drew me to the university in the first place. So it is a pretty pretty disillusioning experience, to say the least.
I know as an alumna, when I received the email from President LeBron about the sale, I just my feeling was that the Rice administration didn't value the things as special about Rice that I thought were special about Rice. The creativity, the quirkiness, the traditions. It was just very strange to me that something that had such a long tradition, it was so beloved by so many decades of students, would be weighed in terms of, you know, how much money it could bring in.
All right. We're running a little bit against the clock. So one thing that we promised is that we were going to address some questions that were submitted to us from listeners out there, questions that they had specifically about K-True. And I'm going to go ahead and read some of these questions. Some of the questions were quite a bit lengthy, so I'm going to have to paraphrase them slightly. One question that was actually raised by a K-True alum who says that he was actually the one who literally put K-True on the air in the late 60s. His question is, how much does K-True cost the university, and would K-True be willing to come up with that amount every year to presumably pay the university if we stayed on the air? So does anybody know how much K-True actually costs the university?
Ian?
Okay, well, I'll start by saying that K-True receives $5.50 from the Student Association blanket tax we discussed earlier. So $5.50 multiplied by roughly 3,300 undergraduates is somewhere in the neighborhood of $17,000. So that would be K-True's primary operating budget, what we use to put on concerts and other events like that, just station upkeep in terms of the students. Now, in terms of the actual other operating costs, yeah. I'm going to defer to Ian.
The actual expenses that the university has, like we said earlier, there's one full-time employee. We have a general manager who oversees the operations of the station from an FCC-facing perspective. We have a part-time chief engineer who operates our transmitter and is our, you know, on-call engineer for these sorts of things. And we have a part-time clerical aide. Their salaries are paid by the university. Being a non-commercial station, we don't pay an annual FCC license fee, I don't believe. We do have a small operating endowment that was designed to cover the maintenance costs and the power costs for our transmitter. Electricity cost is on the order of a couple thousand dollars a month. You can do the math yourself. We're a 50-kilowatt transmitter. We broadcast 24/7. Ultimately, these expenses are somewhat marginal compared to the other things that Rice does. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you. You had mentioned earlier, before we got on the air, the question of transitioning to an internet-only format and sort of how that might alter our licensing model.
Mm-hmm. To really properly do an internet-only station, things with podcasts and downloadable content, things like that, would require much more money. I mean, podcasts, properly licensed podcasts, are expensive things. Just put someone else's music out there and be able to download it. It's something that is prohibitively expensive for us to have right now. Otherwise, we would definitely have it. We'd have to sit down and do the math, but it might not be feasible given our current operating budget.
But I understand we have – our licensing costs are lower because we have the broadcast over the 50,000-watt transmitter. Is that right?
Yeah, I understand that's true.
Yeah. All right. So the second question that I had received was a question that we'll addresses a topic that we'll actually get to here in a moment. But in terms of what types of legal options K-True might have. The writer noted that there had been some publicity about there not being proper public notice at a U of H Regents meeting and whether that option had been tracked down. But Just generally, you know, this is answering this question is actually a pretty good segue in terms of, you know, what at this point, what can people do, and what options is K2 considering to help save the station?
Well, Joey, would you like to address that?
I'm sorry.
You look like you want to say something.
I'm sorry. What was the gist of that question?
Oh, just what options is K-True considering to help preserve 91.7 FM as a 50,000 watt on-air terrestrial station?
Okay. Well, we're obviously trying to – we're doing this right now. We're putting the information out there as to why K-True is a valuable resource for Rice University. And we hope that Rice University will – halt the sale. We hope that they will.
One of the parties will back out of the asset purchase agreement to buy the tower.
And like has been said before, there's nothing that has been signed yet. There's no contract for sale. So that's where we stand right now. To those of you who may be interested, you know, how can I help? We currently host a webpage at www.savektru.org, savektru.org, where we have, you know, information. We have petitions available on that website. And we also have our regular website, ktru.org, which has links to our schedule, a link to listen online, and play sheets and other general information. So that's what we're focusing on right now, and when we come to the other bridges, I suppose we'll cross them. But at this point, we are trying to more or less convince the university to halt the sale.
It's very important that we demonstrate the importance of K-True to both the University of Houston as well as Rice University.
To KTRU Houston?
KTRU Houston. And
we are complying with FCC requirements as we speak.
That's right.
Responsibility.
That's right. Very responsible.
Yes. Snuck in a legal ID there.
And we always make sure to take care of that stuff. But as far as helping, it kind of depends on the individual and how much you want to help. You can help on a very small scale just by going online and signing our petition. It's very quick, and that's the easiest way you can help. If you have more time or want to do more, there are different K-True events that are honestly going on weekly. We have last Wednesday we had an open to the public forum discussion, and there were 100 to 150 people there. Any sort of event we have, whether it's a show somewhere in the community, or I believe we're going to have a show here on the 9th, as well as a show at Fitzgerald's on the 24th, showing your presence is important. As well as writing emails, there's an entire list on Save K-True, and just send those through. As well as, let's see, what else are we doing? So much.
If you're really passionate about the station, we're encouraging both Rice student supporters and community supporters to join what we're tongue-in-cheek calling the K-True Street Team. So send an email to
info@savektru.org. The address is also on the website, so if you go to savektru.org, but info@savektru.org, send us your name, your email address, and your telephone number.
So we're looking for people to help with things, whether it's flyers or setting up events, things in the Houston area.
Yeah, to summarize, our strategy at the moment is to apply public pressure to the parties involved with the asset purchase agreement, Rice and the University of Houston, to back out of the sale.
Yeah, we are only David, and the administration may be a Goliath. So, this is the extent of what we're trying to do. I'd also like to add that the show on the 9th will be in the Grand Hall of the Rice Memorial Center. So that's just downstairs.
Yeah, we're still working on the details of who's going to be there, but it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun from what I've heard.
Yeah.
So you definitely don't want to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we just got a listener question. Over while we've been speaking, and this question relates to, you know, we just talked a moment ago about what we're going to do now and what we're going to do in the future. This question actually relates to what has been done so far to save K-True.
Oh, that's good.
Okay, so let's run this through. We have spoken with the administration several times. Myself personally, myself, Kevin, and Kelsey Yule, former station manager, with four members of the administration, President Lebron, Vice President of
Administration
Kevin Kirby, Dean of Undergraduates John Hutchinson, and Vice President for Public Affairs Linda Thrain. And we've had several meetings with them, just closed doors, small meetings.
The students' leadership has had one personal meeting with them, and we've also had an alumni meeting with them.
Yeah, so some of our former KTRU DJ alumni, and also some former or non-KTRU alumni as well. We had a protest on the Sunday after the sale was announced on campus by the statue of William Marsh Rice. And this past Tuesday, we hosted an open forum with mostly Rice students who, if they had questions to ask of the administration, we were hoping they could be answered. But unfortunately, the administration was not able to make it. We've also hosted a Save KTRU show at the Mink. That was last Saturday. We had seven bands play.
It was great.
It was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
Is there anything I'm missing?
Yeah, we've also received substantial media coverage in the Houston Chronicle, Houston Press. We've written several op-eds for both the Houston Chronicle and the Rice Media, the student newspaper, the Rice Thresher. So we've been trying to, get the word out about the sale and the movement to stop it.
This past week, we did have a double full-page ad in the Rice Thresher containing the names of 4,315 people who had signed our petition.
So I guess as far as things we've done, we have actively engaged in rallies and protests and public forum meetings that have had either steady or growing numbers. We've met with the administration on a few occasions, and we're trying to push for a larger meeting, a more open meeting, and I guess we're just kind of continuing that.
Mm-hmm. And if I could just really quickly mention a sort of an elephant in the room point, there's often the question of what happens if and when KTRU goes off the air, and I think we risk losing momentum if people think that that's a done deal if that happens. And personally, I'd like to stress that doesn't mean that it's a done deal, that's
exactly
when things actually might begin to escalate. So if you hear us go off the air, I personally would like to ask you to visit savektru.org and find out what you can do, because there's going to be a lot to do if that happens.
And listen online at ktru.org.
They took us off the air in 2000. Correct. Mm. And that was not the end. And we rallied together even stronger and even more determined, and we got back on the air. So it does not mean it's over.
More concretely, if the agreement to purchase the tower goes through, there is, per FCC regulations, a period in which we can formally contest the transfer of license with the FCC.
And my understanding also is that there's actually an informal process as well, whereas basically anybody can write to the FCC and say, mm-hmm. hey, I do not support this the transfer of this FCC license. So, it can be as easy as writing a letter or email and sending it to the FCC. That could also be.
We strongly encourage listeners to do that, by the way. And if you'd like more details about that, just access savektru.org.
And the basis of the argument of why the FCC would block the transfer of a license would be whether or not this transaction serves the public good. So by writing to the FCC, the aim is to demonstrate that, through your opinion, by your opinion, why is losing KTRU bad for Houston? Why is losing KTRU bad for you, the listener, and also the community? So if you hear classical music and it's not the classical show, I would suggest to write a letter to the FCC, and the FCC is available at FCC.org. Am I correct?
Correct. That's FCC.gov.
FCC.gov. I'm sorry.
Yeah. And copy us on your letters. Send those to info@savektru.org. We're curious. We like to know these things, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it seems to me, and going back to Vincent, that point you made was you know, we're all very active right now while K2 is still on the air, and I would imagine that once this valuable resource has been taken off the air, it's going to light a fire under some people in the Houston community to get even more involved because, you know, we're all enjoying it while we still have it, but when it goes away, we will feel all the more deprived of something that we value. So, so stay involved, and once we go off the air, it is too early to have a funeral for K2, I'm afraid. One other question that we had real quickly, and this is a technical question that came in, and we defer all technical questions to our good friend Ian. And the question is, for those of you who don't know, there's a what is called a translator, which I really don't know what that is, but it's a translator located on the Rice University campus that actually broadcasts K-TRU on 91.5. And the origin of that translator is that for a long time, it was almost impossible to hear K-TRU on the Rice University campus because the transmitter is actually in the very far north part of Houston near Humble. So the question the listener asks is the 91.5 FM translator part of the deal with U of H? And will Rice let students use that lower power frequency after 91.7 gets converted to classical music? And since that's a technical question I don't know the answer to, I'm going to defer to Ian on that.
Well, that's a difficult question to answer because the terms of this agreement are still confidential. So I don't know exactly if the translator was included in the purchase agreement. We know from the summary of the purchase agreement, which is included on the agenda of the U of H Board of Regents meeting that approved negotiations to purchase this station, we know from that only 91.7 FM and our main transmitter that were mentioned specifically. From speaking with possibly the only person with insider information of the deal who is authorized to speak with us, we understand that their method of feeding information to the transmitter is different than ours in a way that may preclude operation of our translator. If I had to give you an engineering guess, I would say that they don't intend to keep the translator on top of the stadium working. As for whether or not Rice will let students use that low-power frequency, the license to use that frequency is one and the same with the license to use 91.7 FM, and it is a requirement that this fill-in translator broadcasts the same content as 91.7 FM. That's something that would have to be negotiated.
The terms of the deal are not only to sell the transmitter, but also the FCC license. So without the FCC license, we have no right to broadcast on 91.5 FM.
Or anywhere.
Or anywhere, or at all.
Yeah, I guess maybe what the answer or the question the listener is asking is, if we lose 91.7, can we at least keep 91.5?
The short answer is no.
Short answer, no. Long answer would involve the FCC and all parties.
And it's still probably no.
Would still probably be no.
Well, and Ian, also, would there be a broadcast issue with that as well? Like, if someone's broadcasting a high power signal at 91.7, would it not cause too much interference with
power
91.7?
That's why we have 91.7 right now, isn't it?
Right.
91.5 is a low power translator. It's about 10 watts. It's very small, and because it's kind of a fill-in translator, it's designed not to have adjacent channel interference with 91.7. It's possible that you could broadcast a signal at 10 watts or lower on 91.5 and not have interference with 91.7 FM. But that's something we'd have to get out in the field with spectrum analyzers and figure out. And again, it's something that the FCC would definitely have to be involved in.
So I think, to our listeners in Pasadena, which is where I'm from, even if we were broadcasting on 91.5 FM, I don't think you'd be able to pick it up way out there.
I know everyone in Humble wouldn't be able to get it.
Right. It's kind of, you know, the filling in a donut, that our broadcast donut. It covers a small area here on the Rice campus because students, even if they wanted to listen to K-TRU, couldn't about 10 years ago. And so it was installed to address that concern. But seems to me, based on what we're hearing at the table, as a long-term solution, doesn't seem particularly likely. Okay, so we're running up against the clock here. We stole a little bit of time from our devoted DJs to put on this event, so I want to give them some opportunity to play whatever music they want to, because who knows, this could be their last shift. We hope not, but you never know. So to conclude, does anybody have any other points that were not discussed thus far and that they think are important before we turn it back over to our lovely DJs?
We'd like to stress again that this isn't over. Nor will it be over for some time. If there is any sort of petition to deny the transfer of the license, there would be another long period of time in which the transfer of the license would not be finalized. So just because we may be off the air does not mean it's over. Just because you haven't heard about it for a while does not mean it's over. There are always things that to be done, and there will be things to be done until, if that's the situation, until the ink dries and everything. So I'd like to, and there have been a lot of misconceptions that, it's already been sold, or you guys are still on the air. So it's not over until...
The FCC
even
says
it's not over. Yeah, it's not over says. Even after the fat lady sings, as it happens to be. Oh yeah, do you have another question?
No, it's not another question. It's just wanted to let everybody know that if you tuned in late for this roundtable discussion, you will be able to access this on savektru.org. We magically have the technology to record this roundtable discussion. We will try to get it uploaded on savektru.org. And I think in general, savektru.org is a very good resource if you want to stay plugged into what's going on and if you have any questions and if you want to get involved. That is the major through point through which we are communicating a lot of our information.
I'd also like to add that we are currently hiring. Our DJ application can be found online at ktru.org, and they are due a week from yesterday, the next Friday, this coming Friday.
We're conferring with our DJ
September
director.
10th.
September 10th.
Yes. We are still hiring.
So if I can just add really quickly, if you value what KTRU does and what KTRU has done for the last 40-some-odd years, now is the time to get involved. Come on out to all of the benefit shows that happen.
They're fun.
They're fun. They're so much fun. If we have rallies, if we have protests, come. Do not be quiet. Do not be, shy. Come out. Be part of this. Now is the time.
And we've actually seen some pretty great things that our listeners have provided. As we discussed on before we got on the air here, somebody has a giant sign in their yard that says Save KTRU, and people have come to help make our T-shirts, and Charlie Hardwick helped design a Save KTRU logo for us. So, there's lots of different ways to help. It's not necessarily that you have to be a lawyer or be an FCC specialist or anything like that. There are lots of different ways that people are contributing to help save KTRU. So, stay involved and stay plugged in. And in the meantime, KTRU will keep doing what it's been doing for the past 40 years in bringing you underexposed genres of music that will hopefully educate you and the students who are broadcasting the music as well.
Yeah, we always like to say that the learning experience is not just for the listener, it's also for the DJ. So we're, doing our best.
Yeah, and of course, the most important thing from KTRU's perspective is the listeners, to be honest with you. None of us would be involved in KTRU, and none of us would be fighting hard to save KTRU if it wasn't for our listeners. So from our perspective, we are definitely beholden to those of you who are tuning in to 91.7.
Everyone here at this table would like to say thank you.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you.
We love you.
Yeah, thank you for your support. It's, we've been down this road for, 40 years now? So... So to all of you who have listened to us at any point in that 40 years, thank you. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, I think, unless anybody has anything else, that's going to conclude our roundtable. Again, this recording will hopefully be available on savektru.org relatively soon. We will now turn it back over to our regular DJs. So enjoy the rest of KTRU's programming.